Muslims opening prayer, Al-Fatiha. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين. Praise be to Allah, God and Evolver, Cherisher and Sustainer of the worlds. We seek Him for guidance. We seek Him for forgiveness for our faults, our sins. We put our complete trust in Him. We believe in Him, and we do not turn back from the faith that He has guided us to. And I bear witness that there is nothing worthy of worship except the one Lord and Creator for us all. And I bear witness that Muhammad is the universal messenger of that one Lord. Today, I want to begin with the idea or concept that we were discussing last Sunday and proceed from that point. If you recall, we were talking about the nature of a human being and the need for the human being to have some kind of reference for his life, some kind of reference point for his life. In this world today, we speak of human being, humanism, and this the idea is becoming more and more popular today. I recall maybe 10 years or so ago, maybe earlier than that, more recent than that, it wasn't that idea, it was something else. And most of us recall a few decades ago the idea for the human being, the reference for the human being. What do you mean by reference? A standard for the human being. A standard of what is proper for the human being. What is good character? What is good morals? What is good behavior? What is good thinking? What is right thinking on the part of the human being? So back then, a few decades past, God was the idea, you know, and religion was that standard. People were Christians, most of them. And those who weren't Christians, they at least had a Christian sensitivity. They would feel ashamed if you would call their attention to their bad behavior in the name of Christianity. They would apologize for their bad conduct. But that time is gone. That time is not here anymore. It's gone. So we are not governed by any church principle or religious principle anymore. Most of the people out there in the streets, they don't seem to respond to the principles of faith anymore. And many of them just boldly, outright, reject the idea of God and any religion at all, you see. So we're living in a new time, and people have lost the old ethos that I think Brother Shuaib mentioned on television the other day. I watched his presentation. It was very excellent. They have lost identification with the set of principles that once represented a standard for the American people. So today, we have to find something else. And the society is growing and growing and growing. Many people have come into America that are not Christians since the first Christians came. I believe the first Christians, they thought of America as a place for Christians. The pioneers, the early settlers who came here, they thought of this land as a place for Christians. But since then, the economic needs, the need for laborers, etc., has brought in a lot of people who didn't come from Christian backgrounds. They have come from Buddhism, they have come from Hinduism, they have come from many religions that are foreign even to the religion of Christianity in many respects. They have also come from Muslim society, societies of the outer world. Many Muslims are here now. Perhaps there's maybe 3 million immigrant Muslims here in the United States. So America's changing. And then the communist revolution that took place in the early 20s, I think, around 1925, something like that. The communist revolution brought about a great influx of Gnostics, agnostics, and atheists. People who say, oh, don't mix the idea of God in my life. I think they call those people agnostics, right? They don't care to discuss religious matters. They don't crusade against the idea of God, but they reject the idea as being an idea that everyone has to accept. So they take a neutral position, and they say, well, we can't prove God is, we can't prove he's not, and we shouldn't mix it in our business, you see. So a lot of those people begin to make their presence known in the American society. And now, atheists, they seem to have just as much, get much as respect as the believing people. In fact, it seemed to me, in many of our quarters, especially academic quarters, the atheist gets more respect than the religious people. So the American character of the American society, the American population, has been changing all along. And now that religious, strong religious conscience that was once in the society, and the standards that represented that Christian or religious consciousness in the society, is of little consequence now for the people. The behavior and character and attitudes of the people of the Western society, especially America. So there's a need now for something to fill that void, because there is a void. People have to be tied together by something. If people belong to one society, they have to have some common cement that cements them all together, some common bond that holds them all together. If they don't have that, then that society is weak. You know, the scripture speaks, as Jesus says, even if the devil's kingdom be divided, how can he stand? Something has to unite anything if it's going to operate as a force, as a single force. So America needs to operate as a single force. When we are faced with problems, economic problems, when we are faced with social problems, family problems, when we are faced with the threat of an enemy to the life of this nation, we have to have a common force. And if all our forces are divided and separated and turned against each other, or there is no coherency, no unity between them or among them, then this country doesn't have any strength. And that's a sad case. That's a sad condition. So we don't want that. And many people, as we are working to focus the human mind on something precious, on something common for all of us, something inclusive, something that and allows all of us to equally identify in it. And this is a great problem. So we were talking about last week, we were talking about the concept of man and how man needs to discover himself. The first knowledge for man is self-discovery. The world has been built on man's understanding of himself, his nature, his behavior, his appetites, his ambitions, his aspirations. The whole world has been patterned on the lines of man's knowledge of himself, what he is, what he's capable of, and what he has capacity for. You see? The whole world has been patterned on that. So we find that some nations are bringing that back to the consciousness of the people, because they see that the process, the time, the process of civilization is giving man to the cycle of the natural world. And man has to survive that cycle. It's no good that man rise up like a plant come in the sun, and when the fall season comes, he withers and dies. And he has to be dead all through the winter until spring. And spring comes, and he has to start all the way back over from zero. That's okay for plants, but man doesn't like to be subjected to that kind of cycle. You see? And if we understand the New Testament correctly, in fact, if we understand the Old Testament, because after all, the New Testament is nothing but a repeatal of a principle that's established in the Old Testament. If we understand the book correctly, then the book is telling us that God's offer to us, his great favor to human beings, is deliverance from that cycle. To give us the knowledge and insight into the nature of society and its behavior that will enable us to keep society alive. Like that tree that Quran mentions. We mentioned this last week too. That tree that Quran mentioned that gives its fruit in every season. It doesn't die in the winter. It doesn't stop giving up the fruit in July. July comes, it's still giving fruit. Every season it's giving its fruit and it does not die. That's the hope of society. That's the hope of intelligent people in society. The hope of the aggressive mind. That we can get out of this cycle of death and life and see the life structure and then bring that life structure to be the structure for the society so that the society never has to suffer death. Moral death, intellectual death, cultural death. That's the way of societies that haven't been blessed with this precious knowledge we're talking about. And history shows us how they rise and they fall. They rise and they fall. Fall. Fall season. Fall of a nation. Right? They rise and they fall. One philosopher, a Western philosopher, can't recall his name at this time, which is no big thing anyway, you'll forget it even if I knew it. Because that's not what is important. The important thing is the real life that we have to live and doing something about making it work right. I can't recall his name. Anyway, he says that leaders, political leaders, they don't decide the future. He said the character of their people decide the future. And I believe that. I truthfully believe that. That leaders don't decide the future. The character of the people decide the future. President Kennedy, you know, a lot of us think, oh, the President Kennedy, great president, you know. Another Roosevelt are better, you see. But we have to see him in the environment and time in which he lived and came to be the leader. And if you look at him in the circumstances of his time, you'll see that he was ushered into the leadership. It was a demand for him. And if there's no demand for a leader, you won't have it. There has to be a demand for a leader. That demand has to be in the people. God says in the Quran that your death and your resurrection is as the death and resurrection of one man. Now, let's look at that and look at what the Bible says about Jesus Christ. He says, I am the life, I am the death, I am the resurrection, right? And the whole generations died in the first Adam. And they are resurrected in the second Adam. All right, so look at this now. What is it saying? It's putting the emphasis on one single person. And making it appear to us that a single person brings life, brings death. But understand this, that single person, the Quran makes it very clear. That single person is the single person that binds us all together. It's not me, Walid Muhammad. It's not you, Mary, John is not single person in that respect. It's the single nature of all of us that hold us all together. When that single precious nature gets the right environmental conditions, it comes to life. And it prospers under that favorable condition. When it does not have those very favorable conditions, it suffers. It may eventually die. It's a single person. In this respect, it's the single basic nature and constitution of all people. That's why Adam is spoken of in the plural sense in the Bible. Scripture begins, Genesis begins with God informing the angels, or informing the creatures of his intent to make man. He makes the man, and so it says. But read the Genesis on. And as you get a few chapters away from the first chapter, you see that Adam is given as plural. It says, and in the day that he made them and called them Adam. It didn't say Adams. And call them Adam. And you'll hear some people now refer to those men of the cloth, refer to the race, the human race, as the Adamic race. Adamic race. But in the early scriptures of the Bible, Genesis, there's no need for adjectives like that, Adamic. Just said he called them Adam in the day that he made them. He called them Adam. Quran, expressing the same, says that he created you from nafsin wahida, from one nature, or from one human type, and then made of that its mate, and spread from them twain many men, women and many men, right? Many men and many women. رجال and كثيرة والنساء. And spread from them twain many men and women. There are those who are so-called scholars in the religion who would disapprove of me even discussing this like this to you all. They say this is not to be discussed with common folks. It's only to be discussed in the circle of those that know it already. Now, I consider those people to be hoarders who hoard the truth, like greedy people hoard material wealth. They hoard knowledge, you see. So I disagree with them. And he spread from them many men and many women. From them twain. What is this talking about? Adam is an entity or type, and in Adam was Eve. If Adam wasn't in Eve, then the Bible is wrong. When it says that God took something out of Adam and formed Eve. So Adam was in Eve. He took something out of Adam, and with that something he took out of Adam, he formed Eve. So Eve and Adam were first created together. And then something was taken out of Adam, and it became distinctly Eve. Right? And Adam became distinctly Adam in a deep sleep. In a deep sleep. According to the book, when he made Eve, the next thing, he put Adam in a deep sleep, right? And made Eve. So when Eve got her distinction, Adam was asleep. She got her identity out of Adam. But when she came into her identity, Adam was asleep, according to the Bible, Genesis. Saying he caused the man to fall into a deep sleep. And he took from the man a rib and made the woman. and then brought the woman unto the man, and filled in the place where he had taken the flesh out of the rib. So he took some out of the man and then put some back. According to Genesis, he put something back to fill in the place where that something had been removed or taken from. You see? So this is all metaphorical symbolism, symbolic language. It has to be interpreted in order to understand it. It's a shame that we accept these stories literally and a burden in religion while trying to believe that God is no respecter of person. We are burdened thinking that woman is not equal creation with man. That woman is the beginning of man's downfall. Yes. See, that's the idea that we get. And many of us don't like to express that because it goes against the grain of the sweet sound of the religion. You know, the religion sounds very sweet in its musical composition. But when we start to decipher it logically or rationally, then we have a problem. So we try to suppress these ideas or these things that we see rising up when we start to apply some logic or some rational thought to it. We try to suppress that because we don't like to have that kind of discord in our beautiful, melodious religion. Now, that's all and good. But I say it's time to, you know, mental cases in olden days, to bring a mental patient back to his senses, sometimes they would put him in a dark room, and he wouldn't know what's going to happen. All he knows is the lights are out, he can't see a thing. And they would just start firing shots around him. Yeah. Now, somebody say, that's a cruel thing to do, to frighten that man to death like that. But when they brought him out of the room, many times he was cured. So I think it's time for us to use a little bit of shock treatment. We've been too easy with ourselves, you know. It's time for us to use a bit of shock treatment to get us back in our good senses. Yeah. So the Eve principle must represent something, according to Genesis, that is close to the heart. Because the rib is a bone, an encasement around the vital organs, the upper extremity of the trunk of the body, heart, lungs, mainly heart and lungs are in that area where the ribs are. And the ribs seem to be an encasement or kind of protection for those vital organs. Now, if a rib was taken and the woman was made from a rib, then the rib must suggest something close to the heart. Now, compare this with the language of the Quran. The Quran says, he created the human being from the man, from a thick liquid that issues from between the loin and the rib. The loin and the rib. I want to go to the board now for a minute. You know, you have rib case, right? Have the rib case. And this rib case, behind it is the heart, lungs, mainly. Vital organs. The heart pumps life, energy to all the parts of the body. And the lungs cleanses the blood, and gives oxygen that's needed for consciousness, right? If you don't get oxygen, you'll faint, you'll lose consciousness. But that's a delicate balance too, because they can give you enough pure oxygen, you pass out too. So it's delicate balance, right? And somewhere between the ribs, where the ribs stop, there's an area between the pelvis and where the ribs stop. And here, they call that the loin area, right? Loin area. You know loin chops?
Yes.
L-O-I-N, loin, right? That's the loin area. And the book, the Bible, speaks a lot about wearing a loin cloth, especially in the old books of the Bible, the wearing of a loin cloth. And men are told, gird up your loins. Gird up your loins. It means protect your loins. Protect that area, right? Now, this area is also called lumbar. Lumbar. And the lumberjack, when he chopped the tree and it gets it, timber! And then he makes it lumber. And it's spelled differently, but it's pronounced the same. It's spelled L-U-M-B-E-R, lumber. It ain't lumber. It's pronounced, correct pronunciation of this word is lumber. Not lumber, lumber. And the correct pronunciation of this word is the same, exactly, lumber. So here we have lumber in the tree, and we got lumber down here in that loin section, you see? And somebody been cutting it there, too. I think they've been felling a lot of us trees. They don't say cutting it. They say felling trees. Hey, that's odd, isn't it? Sounds like it should be falling trees. Fell is past tense. Fall, fell. But when they're cutting down trees, they call it felling trees. Like this, failing, right? Trees. Now, it's strange to me that they designed something that only looks like a brace to hold a shoe in good shape, and they call it a shoe tree. What in the world was on that inventor that made him call that a shoe tree? Ain't nothing in the shape of that thing that suggests tree to my mind. All right, so this is the area. So we put here, loin, L-O-I-N. Now maybe some of you have bought some loin chops of the lamb. They're very expensive, aren't they? They're more expensive than other chops, right? Very expensive chops, those loin chops. What is so special about this area? Its strength, its ability to balance the body. In the lower extreme, you got two legs balancing the body, right? Up to the hip, up to the hip, pelvis, hip. Okay. So here, see, this is a balance. You know how to make your scales. I'm not too good at this, but you get the picture. See, that's the balance now, okay? What's holding this balance? Two legs. Two legs holding the balance. So the body is balanced upon two strong legs. Now, there's a greater balance than the two legs. That balance is the loin. That's the lumbar. It's a greater balance. It's balancing what's above it. What's above the legs is heavier than what's under the legs.
The most of the weight of the body is not down there. It's up here. Now, the legs, they there, but there's the little spinal section. The little spinal section right back there with those discs that the disc jockey plays on. With those discs, you see, those discs back there that fit just like that new thing they made to hold those 45s, those little 45 records. You know, they got something that it shrivels. It's got joints that fit very close. And they put that up under there for the disc, right? You put the record on that, you see? Yeah. So we have those little joints there fitting very close together. Very close together. And they call them lumbar vertebrae. That section. Lumbar vertebrae. All right. So look, that delicate section there is balancing all that weight above it. It's balancing all of these vital organs. All of this is balanced upon it. Now, the symmetry of this body is so well designed. It's designed for the least amount of strain to be on the balance points. So you don't have an arm over here weighing 80 pounds and one here over here weighing 30. Unless you're freakish or something. Something happened to you. It didn't happen to the rest of us, you see. So that whatever's on this side, it corresponds with what's on the other side. So the body is well balanced in terms of its symmetry, right? Yes, it's well balanced in terms of its symmetry. That's to put less pressure on that. If this side was extra heavy, that would be more pressure on that delicate area there. Even the leg would be affected by that. Just the tipping of the weight will also change the form. In time, where the most weight was, that limb would get bigger. The other limb would get smaller. And pretty soon you'll be just as grotesque in your appearance as you are in your balance, right? Yes. All right, so we go above this area now, and we come to another balance. The shoulders, right? And from the shoulders are hanging the arms. The shoulder, another balance. All right? And between the head and the shoulder, there is another balance just like the one down here. Down here is this column. It's that little delicate column of bones that's holding up all this weight up here. And up above the head, the neck, in the neck, there's the same thing. A delicate column of bones holding the head up. Right? Yes. So the delicate balance then is straight down the center. Straight down the center. That's where the delicate balance is for the body. The shoulders, the cross of the arms, and the way everything is. All of it represents a balance, right? Now, the New Testament says that Jesus, after his baptism, he was baptized by John the Baptist. After his baptism, he went out from the baptizing, and a little dove, pigeon bird, flew and rested on his shoulder. So we may understand from that this in the New Testament is saying that the balance is the shoulders. The balance is the shoulders. But the balance is not the shoulders. Is the balance the bar on the scale? The balance is the point in the center of the bar. The balance is not the bars. The bars would represent the shoulder. That's not the balance. The balance is the center. But why is it mentioned then that the bird lit on his shoulder? To say that the balance was there. See? If this is a scale, and here we have the balance, this is the balance point right here. This is the balance right here. And right under that, right in that area is what? The heart. Right? The human heart. The human heart. So this is the balance right here. And the concept that they got this from tells us that the heart is the balance. The heart is the balance. They got this concept from Africa. In ancient Egyptian religious doctrine or literature. And the heart is the balance. The heart is the balance. So the heart is the balance. But here, this the shoulders, like a bar of the balance, are level on average, the ordinary human being, he's level there. You know, some people walk like this. I remember years ago, a lot of people walked like that. Yeah, they did. Because they were work animals. They were pack animals. And they had to carry heavy weight on their backs, coal, ice, all cement, all kind of heavy stuff on one side, on one shoulder. So when they were off work, they walked like that. Just like that. Some of them still do it. Yeah. But the good walk is the balanced walk. The Quran distinguishes between the person who walks evenly and the person who walks tilted. You see? Yes. All right. So here is the balance right here. But if the shoulders are tilted, that's not a good balance. Now here a dove comes as a sign, a symbol. A dove comes and lights on his shoulder. What is a dove symbolic of? The words should suggest something to you. Especially to a poet, dove love, love dove. It has the sound of love. Dove has the sound of love. So the dove lit upon his shoulder. A dove is a symbol of what? Peace. Peace. You see? A dove is a symbol of peace. What kind of peace? Social peace. Social peace. Because a dove is not like a raven. Dove is not like the crow. You ever see crows eating? They don't seem to like each other very much. They don't seem to want each other very much. They seem to be more interested in the food than they are in each other. But if you watch pigeons eat, pigeons are also interested in each other. They'll be eating but also talking to each other. Touching each other. Look like they're kissing or something. Right? Yeah, they'll be socializing while they're eating. But what they call that bird again? The crow. The crow, he doesn't look like he has any social feelings at all. He just eating. When he get his food, he gone. But the pigeons, when they get through eating, they go and socialize. They go really and socialize. They go up in the loft, maybe above your window in your apartment. And you just hear them up there just socializing. They sound just like you. And they be talking all night long, right? Until they get hungry again. And they go out and eat and come back and they socialize all night long. So the dove lit upon his shoulder, meaning peace for social life. Peace for the social life. See? Some want peace for the spiritual life that goes out of the world. Now, Jesus is a sign of peace for the social life, the life of the world. You see? Only a sign. Let's take this off now. So we got delicate balances, right? Very delicate balance. Right here in that area are the strongest appetites the man has. Material, that is, see here? Material, appetite, and you know the other one. The appetite of reproduction, etc., right? All right in that area. Between the loin and the rib. Very delicate area. And the Allah reveals this to the Prophet Muhammad, and the language is so powerful. It says, من السلب والترائب. The emphasis is on Tara'ib, Sra, it means the rib. So the area is between the loin and the rib here. The loin and the rib. That's the area that we are made from. The essence of man. The essence of the life is between the loin and the rib. Why is that said? So we will know where to keep the life, where we will know where to keep the emphasis. So this area represents hunger. You have to have material to replenish the material body. And when this material body gets old, there has to be a sex drive because it's going to get old. So the sex drive enables the body to reproduce itself, right? So maintenance and reproduction. The hunger for maintenance and reproduction is right in this area. And God wants our attention on that. Although this up here is beautiful, but it's supported by this. It's wonderful. You know, all of us got a big heart. The heart is beautiful and wonderful, but it's supported by this. The appetite for replenishment of the material and for the reproduction of that. Yes. Oh, I don't want no religion that's going to emphasize material. And God made the man of the earth. He formed him into a material being. First. He formed him of the earth first. Then he breathed into him. And he was ready to live. If he hadn't given him a material concept first, he would never have been able to receive the breath of life. It was wrong to bring people in religion and put emphasis on other world out there in extremities. Bring them home first. Let them know that God has made you of this world and you have to maintain this life. You have to share this life with your brothers and sisters. Don't be crazy. Don't be a crawl. Be a sociable creature. Yes. And then we can grow and grow strong. All right, let's take this off now. Okay, all right. The emphasis is on the rib. Why? Because this process is good up to a point. This is the strong area. The heart is a sensitive area. So we may say we have sensitivities, and in that area there, we have hunger, right? Hunger. You may say that's fire. Fire. Hunger. Fire. You touch the stomach, it's warm. Heat's in there. All that activity is like the stomach of the earth. In the belly of the earth is fire. You dig down into the earth, you go deep enough, you'll come to the center. And there's nothing but a center of fire. You see? So here is our center here, the fire core. It's a hungry place. But, just like fire feeds the universe, fire is feeding us too. You have to keep that fire, you know, or lose all that fire now. Well, we have to have it at right place, we have to keep ourselves rightly dispositioned as to the dangers in that. All right? Now, when the fire of here, of this, rises, it's heat. If you keep feeding, you get greedy, don't you? You have too much activity down here. It's too much. You've gone beyond the balance point, you see? Too much. You've eaten too much. You're drinking too much. You're having too much sex. You're having sex when sex is not even called for. You're working 2 hours to get up an appetite for sex. You just stopped and you ain't got no appetite for sex. Now here you are working 2 hours. Got a penthouse book and a Playboy book and a 16 millimeter funk film, and you and your mate looking at that to try to work up another appetite. Yes! So something done gone wrong. You got too much emphasis in that area. On that area. Okay, so the heat gets too much. Heat gets too much. Now the heat's getting too much. The fire now is coming up, leaping over the heart. Got up in the heart. Fire. Burning out the senses. So now what we need? We need attention to the rib. Need to get some attention to the ribs. Those principles that protect the vital organs, their heart and lungs. We have to get some attention to that. So that's why the emphasis in the Quran is on rib. Because when we get in trouble, it's the principles of the heart that will bring this area back to its proper condition. It would put it back in proper condition. If the heart can be awakened. And most of us, if we approach right, if we speak to the real nature of human beings, most human beings respond. I haven't seen it fail. So let's take this off now and go to our notes again. Yes, so last Sunday, that's the balance we wanted to put on the board, you see, to show that diagram that helps us understand society's difficulties. Now let us look to something else. You know, many people, they understand what it is to go to work from 5 to 9. Maybe they understand what it is to go from 8 to 4, I don't know. Or to work 3 shifts. But it seems that very few people in this world, and I mean on high and low, understand what it is to go from 0 to 4. Seems like that's a dark area for most people. Now, let's look at something here. Say this is a tree. The tree has roots, right? Tap root. Roots. The higher that tree goes, the bigger its top, the bigger this has to be. Now, if this here is not too much, then this here better not get to be too much. Now, out here in this part of the world, near the desert, you have a lot of the trees. They call them palm trees. And palm trees, you don't... Are you enjoying what I'm doing?
Yes, sir.
Okay, all right. As long as you're interested, we're okay. Palm trees... Their branches branch off from every place. They're down here. Ordinary trees, when they get up some size, you can't even tell hardly a branch was in this area. In fact, there was no branch in that area. the area where the branches are not, it just extends that area. And it puts its branches up high, right? Without dropping them off. But the palm tree drops off its branches as it goes up. And its branches are really thin. They ain't nothing but leaves. A tree that have branches, leaves for branches. You all got some strange trees out here. Yeah, ain't nothing but a leaf, right? It's a leaf. I mean, what you call it? A leaf. Yeah, that's what it is. It springs out here, and as they get old, they drop off. They drop off. And the tree keeps going up, right? So it's a tree that goes up on the principle of death. In order for it to go up, another one has to die. Yes. Oh, yes. I know you can see that. And it doesn't branch out much. It can't branch out like the oak or like some other trees. All of its stuff is right up there. So it's got a head, but no arms. Right? It's armless. A head and no arms. Now, I'm going to ask you to think on the picture of the crucifix. The crucifix shows a man. You call him Jesus. I call him a man. A flesh body of a male. On the cross, with his legs together, to give the appearance that it ain't two legs, it's one. One on top of the other one, nailed on top of the other one, to give the appearance as one. And then the arms are out there, but they're dead. They ain't only dead, they nailed, so if they get life in them, they can't move. Right? Arms are nailed. Feet nailed, one on top of the other one. Like that. And the head got thorns on it. Like a palm tree. Right? Yes. See, some of these palm trees, they have thorns. They have prickly points to them, see? So, it seems that the crucifixion of Jesus is the regression of society back to the point where he found it. Where do I get that from? The New Testament says that Jesus came triumphantly into the city riding a donkey. And the people came out and met him with palm branches. And they put the palm branches in his path for him to walk on them. Showing symbolically that he had conquered the palm tree. And they were submitting their palm tree principle to a new leader. Say, our knowledge is nothing, Christ Jesus. Here, walk on it. We throw it down at your feet. And doesn't the book say that the high and mighty shall be cast at his feet? And doesn't that palm tree want to go up high? It doesn't want to branch out. It just want to tower over something. Those that branch out, they want to give something to somebody else. Say, look, can I serve you a bit? I'll throw a branch out there. Don't you like my shade? I got some sweet flowers that blossom in the spring. I'm going to throw a branch out there. Do you like to smell it? Give you beauty. Show you a big beauty. Do you like my beauty? Tree spread out. That palm tree ain't showing no beauty. It ain't giving no shade. It's just going up to the sky. Now, this Palm Sunday come, you Christians, don't you buy no palm branches unless you're going to put them in the aisle and ask your pastor to walk on them. Say, Pastor, trample these palm branches for us. Let him come down and trample them. He should be mad, too, when he's doing it. He said, "Rawr, rawr, rawr, rawr." there, they got a Palm Sunday and an Easter Sunday. Right? All right. Palm Sunday, you come out in your Easter bunny. The rabbit. Yeah, Palm Sunday, you come out in your Easter bunny. You see? See, the palm tree, its leadership is a rabbit. A rabbi bit down into a rabbit. He ain't got no nerve no more. No courage to fight the evils of society. So he doesn't give any explanations for society to live a better social life. He just go right up into ice kingdom in the sky. You know, the higher you go, the colder it gets. That's how come right here in this warm area, we can find mountains with snow and ice on top of them. So you go up too high, you lose the sensitivity. You get from the level of the heart. You go too up far above the warmth of the people. You become ascetic. You become a priest that knows the Lord and the angels up there, but he has forgotten his mother and his father, his sisters, his brothers, his cousins, his friends down here. So he's satisfied with them just coming to talk to him in the clap box. Claps box? I'm not sure what they call that box. I'm sorry if I'm making them using the wrong name. I'm sorry. I heard it was a claps box. So anyway, he comes there. They come there and sit in the dark, and talk to him through the dark and tell them all about their sin. And he never tell them, look, your biggest sin is that you ain't got no dignity, no control, no economic strength in your black neighborhood. Now don't come back here until you get rid of that sin. He won't tell them that because he has to be loyal to the palm tree. His business ain't down here. His business is way up yonder. So this is a good lesson for us, isn't it? If this tree is to be big and strong, it has to have equal balance down here. If it want to get bigger up here, it has to get bigger down here. It gets its material substance from down here. Right? It feeds on an energy, the energy of a body in the heavens that's material too. The sun is material, just like this earth. But the sun is revealing its essence. It's revealing its essence. The sun is in the process of exploding, unleashing what's in it. And in doing that, it's a hot body, a fire body in the sky, right? What is this symbolic of? The teacher. The teacher. The teacher has the knowledge that's down here in this, that grows this body, material body. But it's not enough for this material body to be there, somebody has to get the energy of that material body. But not in the form of, not in the form of gas. In the form of understanding. So we have to have an enlightenment. There has to be an enlightenment, right? So the sun represents, it's a symbol for enlightenment on the matter of the universe. And with enlightenment regarding the matter of the universe, we can have production. All right. Well, you don't have to tell me Allahu Akbar. I know it. I know it with every ounce of blood and flesh in my body, brother. Now, let's look at again, tree again. This time, we're going to start from seed. Seed. Seed is dead. seed comes in the fruit, or it comes at the, on the plant, it falls off, it dies. And it's dead, believe me. The seed is dead. But it has the germ of life in it. Right? Though it's dead, it's got the germ of life in it. Now the seed came from a living thing. That was something living. Right? Yes. Something was living. And the seed came from the living thing. All right. So, the seed falls down from the living thing and falls upon the dead earth. And it's dead too. Right? Dead earth, dead seed. But if you got something here of that was once alive, see, that it's dead down here, but it has to be something in this that was once alive. So the seed that's dead from a tree or from a plant that was once alive, it has to come to a hatching bed, a reproduction bed, that itself too has something in it that was once alive. So you put manure on the land, right? Manure is something that was once alive. It's the death from a body, right? Or you may put grass, or that may happen naturally. The leaves and grass and plants and other things and animals that died on earth have made that earth fertile, right? All right. So it's fertile because it has the remains of that was once alive, right? Okay. Now they got us here in America, and they left our fertilizer in Africa. And they won't let us have our fertilizer, because they know even though we are mentally dead, if we get our fertilizer from Africa, we will live again. Yes. All right. Now, look. This seed falls down. But look, before it fell, what it did, it offered something. It said, eat of me. Right? It said, eat of me. I am fruit. Eat of me. And the animals eat, and we eat. And we learn the value of this thing we're eating. And maybe at first, you know, we didn't know the value. Maybe when we first started eating, we would eat and throw the seed away because it wasn't tasty. So we eat the tasty seed, we eat it up now. But in time we learn that even the tasty seed should be saved. Don't eat them all up. Save some of them because it represents return. Right? It represents renewal. Return. We can have it all over again. Abundantly. So look at the beauty in the sign of the life of the earth. Look how much beauty is there. A plant grows from a dead thing, comes into the light of the sun, breathes the open free air, receives the water, and grows up. Takes strength to grow up. Takes strength. It has to push up through the soil, push down to anchor itself to go up some more. So it's a struggling life, isn't it? Yes, great struggle. It's a struggling life. It's struggling. And its struggling makes it strong. The more it struggles, the stronger it gets. The bigger the tree, the harder it's wood. Right? Yes, although some, you know, the big soft thing. But most of them, if it's a big soft thing, it's growing in easy ground. Those big, strong, hard trees, they can grow in hard ground. The root will turn a boulder upside down. Yes, strong trees. You see? So they can grow in hard ground. So here, you have to have strength. Strength. That's what we have to have. Strength. And know that the harder you work, the stronger you get. You get strong from using the muscle. Yes, just as that strong tree. Now it grows up and it gets strong, then it bears a fruit or a flower. So Some plants give nothing but just a beautiful appearance, right? But some will also give a flower that's more beauty and a nice smell. They give more. And the one that gives the most is the one that bears fruit. If you take and chop off a pound of the lumber, and you eat a pound of the lumber, you won't get nothing like the amount of nourishment that you'll get from eating just one nut, the fruit of the tree, or one apple, or one pear. Whole lot of that wood ain't gonna give you what a little piece of fruit will give you. So the tree has brought its energy into a fruit, got more energy for volume than any other part of the tree. And it gives that to animals. Animals will eat it. And people. That's charity, isn't it? Now that tree is giving the best part of itself in charity so that others will live. So that even another form of life can live. Isn't that wonderful? Yes. It's giving of itself. Even give its life. It gives its life. It gives up its future life. The future life is its seed. It gives up its future life. Say, if this will help you survive, eat it. Consume me. Yes. Now, do you tell me that the picture of Jesus in the Bible as the Redeemer is more prettier than that picture I just told you? I want you to prove it to me. Prove to me that the picture of Jesus and his sacrifice, or his giving of himself for the world, is any prettier than the picture I'm giving you from a simple tree. Jesus Christ is no new concept. The concept has always been in the workings of life in nature. And they just took it and put it in a man. It ain't nothing but fertility worship. That's all it is. Fertility worship. And they have taken it and put it in Mary Jesus, Mary and Jesus. Peace be upon them. So understand that. And know that we don't need that language. We can speak from a flower, a tree, a plant. We can speak from everything that God has made. And we can give you more understanding and more beauty. Oh, Mr. Why Not Jesus, don't we want to be like that? Don't we want to be a symbol of that? Don't you think it's nice that man, too, is a symbol of that charity in the nature of God's world? Surely it's beautiful. But it's wrong when they say that man is a Jew, or that man is a Caucasian, and then tell every other person, black, brown, yellow, and red people, that they have to come through him in order to get to God. Now that's wrong. And I'll stand here, I'll stand in the White House, I'll stand in the United Nations, I'll stand in China and Russia, I'll stand anywhere on this earth, and I'll tell the priests and the world that that's wrong, and I want them to prove it to me that it's right. That's right. It's detrimental to the minds of all the people, white, brown, yellow, and red. All of us. It's detrimental to our mind and to our health. It's detrimental. It makes the white man a sneak. It makes him a dirty sneak. He gets in that message, it comes to his mind, what that image is saying, and he sees the effect of his image on the non-white races, and it makes him a sneak, a dirty sneak. He goes around holding that secret in his heart and thinking himself superior to you and above your head, and laugh at you at home in the secrecy of his home. He laughs at you for coming to a church and looking at his image and you saying, oh, thank you, Jesus. Oh, Lord Jesus. He laughs at you. Now, if you think I'll tolerate that with my understanding, you got another thought coming. Allah is my witness. I will shed blood in order to remove that thing away from the society. That's right. They say this is a free country. Certainly this is a free country. But this is also a country that claims to stand for what's right. So as long as it claims to stand for what's right, we have the right to demand what's right. That's right. We have all kind of patience with these people. Oh, yes. All kind of patience with these people. But I want to see the preacher that stand up in my face and try to defend that. Especially one from our community.
That's right.
An African American. A black person. I want to see him stand up and try to defend that. And I told the preachers, I said, look, I say, this is not only a religious issue. You can't hold me by the Bible or hold me by the Quran. I know the Quran better than you. I know my rights as a Muslim, and I know my rights as a man. But they don't understand the Quran. So I told them, I said, this is not only a religious issue. This is a race issue. This is a racial issue. Not only a religious issue. Prophet Muhammad, he said to the people, God revealed to Prophet Muhammad to say to the people, I am a free man of this town. He was born a Meccan or Arab, just like they were. He had rights there by birth. All right? Okay. Now, Prophet Muhammad, he didn't go to Rome and tell Rome to get these things out of your church. But in his own land, where he was a citizen, he demanded that you get this stuff out of here. Now, this is our neighborhood. This ain't no white man's neighborhood. I'm not speaking of here. I'm talking about South Side Chicago, West Side Chicago, Harlem, West Oakland. I'm talking about wherever we are in a majority. What right does a white image have to be towering over us purporting to be divine? Huh? No right at all. So I have a human right. I have a right as a citizen of this country to demand that they take white deities out of my sight in my own neighborhood. Certainly I do. Now, you want them in your neighborhood, that's your business. We would hope that they'll put them out of every neighborhood, and no black person would want a black one in his neighborhood. In fact, we'll do the same thing if the man put a black one in his church. We will protest against that just like we protest against a white one. Because the reversal of that thing is just as evil as the other side of it. That's right. We don't want either. We don't want our people artificial like we were in the Nation of Islam. Black Muslims talking about their black gods and couldn't even manage to wipe their butts clean. White man had to come and help us wipe our butts. And we were claiming that we were gods. What I mean by that, we let corruption come into our Nation of Islam. We let corruption come into the minister's class. We let corruption come into the MGT and the FOI. And the white man had to put pressure on the Nation of Islam to wipe our own butts. And we talking about we are gods. I know both sides of this evil. And I don't want either side. And the Lord is my witness to get it out of our life. I will shed blood if necessary. But I don't think it's necessary. Because any sensible-minded, sane person that hear what we're talking about has to understand it. All right. Didn't want to get on that too long. Sorry. See, a sacrifice. Sacrificing the whole life and giving it for a return, a renewal. That's great. If we hoard knowledge and die with that knowledge, then we are selfish seed that hid ourselves away so nobody would have what we had again. But if we have knowledge and we share it with those that live, we say, look, I'm gone. I can't live here forever. My life is finished. But here's the plan. Take it. You all keep going. That's how we have to become. Poor people. Grassroots, as they call us. We have to become like that. We have to search and find great knowledge and great wisdom for establishing society strong. And then we have to rush. We have to be desperate to hurry up and find another person that we can trust that with. Say, here, take it. Keep the world going. Don't want credit for it. The tree doesn't say nothing, doesn't make no big noise when it gives you its seeds. It's still silent. Right? Yeah, it's still just as quiet as it was. In fact, it's quieter. But when it branches out with all of its branches and all of its leaves, the wind blowing, and you can hear it making a lot of noise. The leaves rattling, right? Leaves clapping. But when fall time comes, the branches get heavy with fruit. And the wind can't shake them as much. So there's less noise, right? Yeah. When the branch is lighter, it makes a lot of noise. But when the branch gets heavier, it holds the branch. The wind comes, and it might move like that. But it ain't doing a whole lot of vibrating. It gets quieter. And it drops its life and feed it into the dead world. Right? Now, seed, from the seed, we get a plant. Plant. What is this suggesting? Seed. That it takes to start life over again. Then plant. Plant means to put in the earth, right? To expect growth. Put in the earth to expect growth. Plant also means to hide. Like you plant something. You plant a seed, or plant a bad seed. You're hiding it so that it can grow outside of the view or sight of the people, right? So plant has many meanings. But in plant, don't we have this word? Just take the last letter off and you got plan. Get the knowledge, then plan. Take the knowledge and come up with a plan. You have to have a concept. You have to have a plan. You plan, then what you get? Growth. Right? Growth. Growth. So we have plant, and we have growth. And from growth, we have what? Fruit. If it's a fruit-bearing tree. Fruit. Fruit for feeding, and in the fruit is contained also the seed for reproduction, right? So that's beautiful, isn't it? Yes. All right. Let us live like that. Think like that. Live like that. What does Jesus say? Woe be unto you if I return and you haven't borne fruit. Right? He charged them to bear fruit. Tell me, where is the fruit that this world have borne among us? Huh? Where is the fruit that they have borne among us? If you got fruit, you can do what they are doing. Once I get the fruit that contains the seed, I can match what the others did. Now, I want to know, where is the fruit among the Negroes? Jesus charged them, they claim that Jesus is their leader, that Christ their Lord. Jesus charged them to bear fruit. Now I'm asking, where are the fruit that they have borne from my people? Huh? If those pastors got the fruit that Jesus left, how come they're not showing the same ingenuity and the same productive power that I see in the white Irish,
That's right.
In the white Italian,
That's right.
In the white Jew?
That's right.
Huh? In the white Hispanic?
That's right.
Mexico, look at it,
right.
Look at them. They sustain themselves. They know how to run a society. Mister, are you saying that we have to have a nation of our own in order to prove our ability, our worth? No, I'm not. The Irish that live here, they ain't got no separate nation. They live here. They are part of this whole society. Complementary part of this society. But they run banks. You don't find no Negroes in their neighborhood running their neighborhoods. You don't find no Negroes in their neighborhood pressing their clothes and selling them clothes and feeding them and collecting their rent and running their lives. But in our neighborhoods on the south side of Chicago, you find white folks on the south side of Chicago. They represent the vital forces and life arteries of the south side of Chicago. They represent it on the west side where we are. They feed us, they clothe us, they protect us, they police us, they do everything for us. We don't have nothing of our own but a right just to stay there and be the consumers. That's right. So, if they have really done what Jesus said, he charged them to bear fruit. Now, if you brought that Bible in my African country, or gave it to me, mister, then I say, well, how come you didn't live up to the promise that you made to Jesus Christ? How come you haven't given me the same knowledge that have established you? Believe me, they have kept away from us the knowledge that established them. And they don't intend for you ever to get it. Yes, Allah has brought it to us. And we don't need them anymore. They can turn out all the lights. They can close down the White House. Close down the federal department. They can close down the city. Close down the state. They can close it all down and go to bed or go to hell. And we will still be here. We'll build it up again. That's how much we need them. And if you don't believe it, just stick with me and do what I say. Stick with me and follow my direction. And you will see that we don't need them. In fact, they might be coming to us saying, we need you all. It happened before. It's history. This religion went into Africa. And in a few centuries, Timbuktu, an African place in Africa, became so high in the sciences that the people that brought them the sciences came to them for sciences. This is a fact of history. The Arabs that brought the sciences to the Africans then came to the Africans for the sciences. Because those Africans' minds became so active. They were turned on. They were so thirsty for understanding. They became so energetic that they became greater producers and greater men in the sciences than the people who had introduced them to this religion. Now, I know many of you say all that nigga just talking. But already, big people. When I say big people, I mean people that are responsible for many important activities of their own land and country. People in the high quarter of the power. They have told me, Brother Imam, one day we'll have to have you come to our land and do the same thing you're doing in America. They have told me that. I'm not a man that wants any intention on me. If they had said that to some of you so-called Negroes, you'd have been on television.
That's right.
Yes. Mr. So-and-so of the so-and-so cabinet.
That's right.
in such and such country said that they want me to come over there and do the same work I'm doing here in their country. Well, I'm going to get around to them, but I'm pretty busy now. Yeah, it was showing off. Didn't no one person tell me this. I've been